Sabotage live on TSN 690. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. I guess we can't call this the Kaufman Show if we don't start with deadlines, right, Jay?
It's the Kaufman Show.
It's the Kaufman Farrar Super Happy Fun Time Hour.
Okay, yeah, we can call it that.
Okay, you like that?
I like that.
It's got a bit of a Japanese game show feel to
it. Super Happy Fun Time Hour?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait till you see what we talk about. The title might not be that accurate.
Let's humiliate people and beat them up with rubber sticks.
Not happening on tonight's show.
Oh, that's too bad. That's it.
Thank you, Marco Polo.
Yeah, he deserves that.
How are you, Jay?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm well. It's great to be here. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to you all that are listening. Full and all tryptophaned out. Fun times.
Tryptophaned out.
Tryptophaned out, man. That's the chemical in turkey, and I think in red wine, that makes you tired.
Ah.
It's called tryptophan.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a good sports connotation to
There's
it, too,
There's a
right?
lingering pumpkin pie in here.
There is. What time and how burnt is my question.
I don't know, but the plastic doesn't seem to be securely on it. I cannot trust it.
Oh, I don't know. It's tempting.
Pumpkin pie has never looked good. Think about it. It's just like a round... Like it looks like an ancient pizza. That's what it looks like. It looks like a pizza. Yeah, it's like they dug up this pizza, and it's like, oh look, this pizza was found in Pompeii. Here it is, and then they said, oh, just make it pumpkin pie, and that's what it is.
Okay. We'll call that Greek interpretive history.
That's my
Greek revisionist history. Actually.
Yeah, that's my take on pumpkin pie.
Thank you.
I'm out of here.
Thank you, Jay. So Mike drops the mic. Mic drop, and he's done. You're back at 11, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm here.
Maybe
midnight. I'm going to stay here.
We're with you until 8 o'clock tonight, and then Monday Night Football will rule the airwaves. We've got the Colts and the Chargers tonight. Should be an interesting battle. And I'm having a little trouble reconciling what we're going to be talking about on the program tonight and the idea that we're setting up a football game, because we're going to be joined by Mark Fainarawada, who... might be most famous for breaking the Bonds story.
Is that all he did?
That's it.
Oh, okay.
The Bonds steroid right. story, the Balco story. Right. I believe he almost risked jail time at a certain point for that.
Mm-hmm.
His, along with his brother, who's a Pulitzer Prize winner, they co-wrote this book called League of Denial.
Okay.
There was a PBS Frontline documentary last week. And... needless to say, the NFL has known about concussions for a lot longer than they've let on. To the point that the NFL continues to say that they need to study the science. And a fantastic documentary. Once again, it was on Frontline on PBS, which is pretty much the creme de la creme.
Oh, yeah. I like Frontline. It's the only reason I put PBS on my Bell 5.
No Charlie Rose for you?
No Charlie Rose.
Okay. Fair enough. It's a really interesting, I mean, I haven't started the book yet. The documentary was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've been following the concussion fiasco for the last X amount of years, then you probably are aware of a lot of what's happened and what they talk about in the documentary. But to see it all there together, the empirical evidence is astounding. And we're going to speak with Mark Fainarawada tonight about that. And about this, you know, I think it's something that we all as sports fans feel. I sat on my ass all day yesterday watching football, hitting refresh on my Yahoo Fantasy Football sports.
How'd you do? Did you win?
Yeah, unless Danny Woodhead collapses tonight and fumbles 18 times, I'll have won, yes.
Okay.
But why does that matter? It's amazing how the NFL has managed to become the American game, the best marketed. If you've seen the commercials for the NFL, they are incredible.
Mm-hmm.
More hype for National Football League than any other sport in North America, including from yours truly on this station.
Mm-hmm.
And we're about an hour and a half away from kickoff tonight for a game that I will sit and watch. I'll toggle between that and the baseball game. And this is something I'm having trouble with in my head. This is something that I am wrestling with. And I think that I'm pretty sure I'm not alone.
you're wrestling with the game itself, the watching the game? Do you feel guilty watching the game?
That I know everything that's wrong with it, mm-hmm. and I still watch, and I still mm-hmm. get excited, and I still am in pools and in pick'em leagues and still completely immersed in the sport.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, in the end, it's up to you, isn't it?
As the consumer, you mean?
As the consumer, it's either you decide that you don't have a problem with, you know, the things that can happen to these guys who are out there in the field during their careers. I mean, we've seen some horrible injuries over the years, and it's either you feel that, well, it's part of the game. These guys know that they're taking a risk every time they go out there, or you attempt to change the game. I mean, it's hard to take certain precautions sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, without profoundly changing the game.
Well, that's it. And, you know, speaking of changing the game, our second guest in this hour-long, super happy, fun time hour, Kaufman Farrar,
yes,
will be Patrick Burke, who
yes.
has done so much to change the game of hockey and the notions and perceptions of the game of hockey and what is that it's the manly man sport and the machismo of it all. And he's done it quite successfully, and now he's got a new obstacle to tackle. Patrick Burke has written an article, has spoken with Adam Proto from the Hockey News, and has come out as having problems with mental health and depression. And, you know, Patrick is somebody, I don't often say it about people that are younger than me, but I really admire him.
Sorry.
That's okay. Got excited.
Yeah.
By the way, can you hear me okay? I can't hear myself.
Put up your thing.
I tried to. It's on max volume, I think.
I can hear mine perfectly.
No, I can't hear it.
So enjoying the sound of my voice right now.
Oh, good.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I'm going to need this fixed for when we call our guest.
We got Marco. Marco will do it. He knows what he's doing.
All right.
Yes, Patrick Burke is a guy who's not afraid to take on any kind of issue, and that's, you know, and I commend him as well.
Marco, we're talking about depression, so play a non-offensive sound effect so I can see if I can hear in my ears.
Yeah. That was
borderline inoffensive.
Yeah, it was like he kind of played it and said, sure, I'll do that for you, Kaufman. At the same time, he kind of said, screw you, Kaufman.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, that's what Marco does.
I like Marco.
He's passive-aggressive.
He's also smiling ear to ear right now, I like to see.
Yeah, that's rare.
Marco is with us, I guess, until 8 o'clock as well, and then he'll be with you throughout the football game, bringing it to you from that daunting board over there. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Now we both had some practice behind it.
We have. Good luck with that, by the way.
Thanks, man. Yeah. Thanks. It's early.
It's so early.
It's early.
It's so early.
As a guy who stays up late and talks sports, it's early to talk sports, man. I went to bed before the end of a baseball game this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
A no-hitter at
you
the time.
Never do. You were being responsible.
I know.
Because you had to get up and you had to do the show. Did you enjoy doing the show?
Very much.
Okay.
What a pleasure to work with Abe and Robin. It was really, really fun.
Good. Well, yeah. That's the point, right? Have fun.
Right.
You start fresh in the morning. I'm very jealous of that. I wish I can do that.
Are you? You're jealous?
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a little break right now. And then when we come back, we'll speak with Mark Fainaruwata from ESPN.
Can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. Stay tuned. Welcome back. TSN 690, Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here with you. Very excited to be joined by our next guest. You can follow him on Twitter at MarkFWESPN. His name is Mark Fainaruwata. Been a fan for a long time, and was really happy when he accepted our invitation to come on the show tonight. Mark co-wrote Game of Shadows and broke open the Barry Bonds baseball steroid scandal and has not stopped doing important work since then. He is the co-author of League of Denial, an incredible book and PBS documentary that exposes, I think that's the right word. It exposes the, the National Football League, who I'm watching on the TV in front of me. And we will be airing the game tonight. And we air games on Sundays. And we watch games on Thursdays. And during the winter, we watch games on Saturdays. And we watch games on Sundays. And it's tough to reconcile that when you see how negligible the National Football League is in the way that they have hung their players out to dry for so many years. Let's welcome Mark Fainarawada to the show. Mark, hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Thanks for having me. Oh, thanks. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. I have not, in full disclosure, read the book yet, but I'm really looking forward to. The documentary blew me away.
Oh, great. Well, if you like the documentary, we think you'll really love the book. We're proud of both, but the book sort of was the genesis of the whole thing, and it's just, you know, as books are, just has so much more depth and time to sort of flesh out characters and the facts.
How long have you been working on it?
We worked on it, it's been close to 2 years at this point.
And for those 2 years, have you been facing backlash and a concern from the powers that be? What happens if you release this book?
Yeah, I mean, not in a way like threatening, so much as more pushback on the work we've been doing. You know, Steve and I both work at ESPN, and my brother, and as we were doing the reporting for the book and the film, we also were producing some of that work for ESPN. And, you know, frequently as we would do these stories and they would get published either on television, on Outside the Lines, or on the website, we would get fairly heavy pushback from the league, either to our bosses or our bosses' bosses, suggesting the stories were wrong or that we really needed to reassess or those kinds of things, really trying to sort of push us off. But that there were never threats that suggested that the whole project was going to get derailed.
When did you, or how did you feel when ESPN abandoned the project?
You know, we've been saying this a bunch. I mean, on the one hand, very disappointed, obviously. We had a fantastic partnership with Frontline, and PBS, those guys are just such pros. And it was very fruitful. I mean, it produced a lot of stories for ESPN and for Frontline that were online prior to the project ending or coming to fruition. So we were disappointed by it, obviously, and anybody, sort of any journalist, would be concerned about the narrative of whether the ESPN was pressured to pull out. At the same time, it's hard to reconcile all of that with the reality, which is ESPN has been so behind all of this. It's very, the book and the film would not have happened without ESPN. They're creatures of our work at ESPN. And, in the film, we're prominently, represented as ESPN employees. And, when the book was excerpted last week and the film was excerpted last week or a week before, ESPN was all over that. We were on the network a lot talking about it. So, in terms of the journalism, nothing has really changed, and ESPN has been behind this fully.
I think it's impressive that it didn't manage to ruin the integrity of the show for that to happen, for you to be an employee of ESPN, ESPN to walk away, and for the show to continue to have at least the name there. It doesn't, if anything, it says to me that ESPN's abandoning of the project was unsuccessful, because on its face, it looks like they were a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were saying this to somebody the other day. I mean, anybody who would just watch the documentary without knowing what had happened, I don't think would come away with any conclusion but that ESPN was involved.
Right.
So, look, politics happen. I wish I could understand it better. But the reality is, ESPN, we're part of an amazing investigative unit. I mean, Steve and I think it's probably the biggest investigative unit in the country, and not just in sports.
Wow.
And it's doing work that nobody else is doing, with spending money that nobody else is spending. So, this issue aside, we're incredibly grateful for how this has turned out.
One of the things that you can conclude when watching the documentary or reading the book is that the NFL really has a problem here, and have done their best to cover it up for many, many years.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we, there's a lot of detail in the book, but I think overall we paint a portrait of, we think 2 decades worth of fairly profound denial. And it happened sort of on two fronts by the league. On the one hand, you had a growing body of independent researchers who were issuing warnings to the league, either directly or indirectly, in the form of research papers or surveys by amongst players, or ultimately studying brains, who were saying, look, this is a problem. There's a relationship between football and the possibility of having long-term neurocognitive issues, brain damage. And the league effectively attacking those scientists and trying to shoot them down. So you had the league doing that on the one hand, and on the other, you also had them creating their own body of research through this committee they created that was largely NFL doctors, some of whom, including the head of which, had no background in concussions, and creating research that basically said concussions are not a problem, and NFL players are sort of impervious to these kinds of damages. And that was a two-pronged assault that really lasted for, you know, in some form or another, almost two decades.
It's unbelievable when you see, I believe it was a rheumatologist that was the head of the NFL's committee on this, right?
Right. That was Elliot Pelman, and he gets the job. He's a Jets team doctor at the time he gets the job, and he later becomes Paul Tagliabue, the commissioner's personal physician, and is the personal physician of the commissioner at the time that this committee puts out, you know, more than a dozen papers, 16 research papers, in a journal that actually is being edited by a consultant to the New York Giants.
Meanwhile, Dr. Bennett Amalu, who's a respected neuroscientist, is being discredited by the NFL when he wants to look after Junior Seau's brain.
Right. Amalu is actually, we spent a lot of time on Amalu in the book, and he's actually the person who sets off this issue for the league back in 2005 when he studies the brain of Mike Webster, the former Hall of Fame player for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he really sort of does it on a hunch almost. Amalu knows nothing about football. He's a Nigerian-born doctor who wouldn't know a Super Bowl from a cereal bowl, basically, as we say, I think, at one point in the book. He just doesn't know the sport. But he studies Webster's brain, and it's that decision to study Webster's brain that changes the course of the sport in many ways. And then you fast forward to after Junior Seau's death, Amalu has already been ostracized by the NFL, attacked for some of his positions, and now he's trying to get Seau's brain to analyze it, and the NFL intercedes to keep Amalu from studying his brain, suggesting that he is a bad doctor, he has ethical issues and problems like that, really marginalizing him.
They had earlier also said that he did voodoo.
Yeah, Bennett Amalu talks about the suggestion that when he's attacked by the NFL doctors, they're implying all sorts of crazy things about him, and he references voodoo. I don't know that we ever found that, but I think he comes away feeling as if they look at him as this crazy doctor who doesn't know anything, and they're these wise expert scientists who really know the research on concussions, and Amalu should just go away.
In conversation with Mark Fainruwada from ESPN on TSN 690, Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar. Follow Mark on Twitter at MarkFWESPN. Mark, the one thing that I continue to wrestle with is that I'm a football fan. I enjoy watching football. I sat on my couch all day yesterday watching football, fantasy leagues, pick'em leagues. It's completely immersed into our culture. How does one as a football fan reconcile sitting there and watching that a game that they know is killing these players?
Well, I mean, I'm no different than you, frankly. I mean, I'm not a fantasy player, but I sat and watched both the Niners and the Raiders yesterday. And, you know, I'm a big sports fan and a huge football fan. And, you know, my brother's a season ticket holder for the Niners. So we love the sport. And I think our position is, you know, this was never for us about killing football. We love the sport. And nor that we would be so presumptuous to believe that we would have such power. I think it was vastly more about just informing people about what had happened, where the science was, the NFL's role in all of this. And then, you know, having people as formed as they could possibly be. And frankly, I mean, one of the things about the sport, you know, that we all love is how violent and brutal it is. And I'm not sure either Steve nor I want the NFL to change. I don't think you can really take, you know, this out of the game. So it is what it is. And I think the question more pointed is what happens at the lower levels, you know, for high school players and Pop Warner players. And, you know, I think those are the discussions that are happening right now in homes across, you know, America and Canada as they try to figure out, you know, do you want your kids to play football?
Finally, Mark, what was a bigger challenge for you personally while chasing a story? Was it this one or was it the Balco scandal?
That's a really good question. They were both different in their own ways. I think this story was much more challenging in one aspect in that, you know, when Steve and I came to the concussion story, neither of us had done any reporting on it. I had just done one story for ESPN that prompted the book and the interest in the book. But we really were starting from scratch. I mean, there was a lot of great reporting that had been done, but for our own reporting purposes, we really needed to start from scratch. Whereas with Balco and writing the Game of Shadows book, that we'd been doing that reporting for a couple of years. I think the reporting itself in some ways, was really hard. Well, they both were hard, but the steroids story was playing out in secret behind a grand jury, and then having the government come after you and trying to get you to give up sources. That was pretty unpleasant too. So they both had their challenges, but I just feel really lucky for getting to cover two great stories.
Well, you've done a wonderful job with both of them. I've been following your career for a long time. I'm a huge fan, and I really appreciate you letting us speak with you tonight.
Oh, that's so nice of you. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Thank you, Mark. That's Mark Fainruwata. Please pick up A League of Denial, written by Mark and his brother Steve. Available where all fine books are sold, which includes the internet now, Jay.
On the internet?
Yeah.
Oh.
You can buy books on the internet.
Come on.
I know. Isn't it amazing?
Silly.
What a wonderful world we live in.
It is.
NFL football coming up tonight at 8:30.
Sign a waiver.
Action, action, action.
Sign a waiver or change the game.
Our thanks to Mark Fainruwata. Jay and I will be back after the break with Patrick Burke. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here with you on TSN 690. NFL Monday Night Football coming up next. Pre-game show at 8 o'clock. Kickoff at 8:30. Then tune in for the Kaufman Show with yours truly and Jay Farrar right after the game. We'll be joined by Jonah Carey, the comedic stylings of Torben Rolfson. Give away some tickets for the Blue Jays-Mets series at the Olympic Stadium in March.
More tickets.
More tickets. I believe this is our last pair until March.
Is it really?
I think so. Yeah, I think this
I
makes
sense.
Thought
we six. Had more than that.
Yeah, I think my math sucks.
Well, don't look at me.
I know my math sucks. Let's bring in our next guest. Really happy that he also said yes to us tonight. We're bringing you guys a real hour of power here. Patrick Burke is one of the founders of You Can Play. Works for the NHL right now, and that's not what we are here to talk to him about. We'll save that for another day. At another time. Patrick is on Twitter. You can follow him at BerkeyYCP. And he spoke with Adam Proto from the Hockey News this weekend about a side of Patrick that I guess only his close friends and family were aware of. Patrick, welcome back to the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm pretty good, man. I'm pretty good. Thanks. I was blown away when I and had to send you that DM right away when I read your article, the article about you this weekend, which features interviews with you and your mom. About your battle with depression.
Yeah, it was, I appreciated your message and the messages we got from lots of different people around the sports world and Twitter and everything like that, expressing some happiness that people were talking about this issue.
Yeah, and you know what? It's something that people speak of more and more lately. I know that our parent company, Bell, has dedicated a day to it on air this year. Heard from all sorts of athletes and musicians and people like that. And I think the most important thing for people to realize is that they are so far from being alone when they're fighting this.
Well, and that's one of the nice things. Whenever an article like this one or people speak out on this or, the Bell Let's Talk Day occurs, anytime anybody shares a story about it, it helps other people realize that this is an incredibly common thing. The reaction from everyone that I've spoken to so far has been, first of all, oh, I had no idea. And then the second thing is they share their story, whether it's their own or their family member or their close friend or whatever it is. So Mental illness is something that touches everybody, and I think it's a little frustrating that it's still considered to be off limits as a conversation piece.
Well, there's such a stigma around it, Patrick, and I mean, obviously less so now than years ago, but much in the way that I think you did a lot through You Can Play for gay rights in sports, I think that this is another example that shows that being a manly man and machismo isn't necessarily defined the way that everybody thinks it is.
Well, I've never figured it out. I don't understand. You know, if one of your friends is limping around with a broken foot, you don't go, wow, look at him. He's so tough. Well, this is amazing. You go, look, what an idiot. Go fix your foot.
Yeah.
And yet when it comes to a brain injury, which is, a medical condition related to mental illness, there's this sense of that you're somehow supposed to do it yourself or suck it up or power through. And it makes no sense to me. This is a medical condition. It's potentially life-threatening, but it's treatable. And the idea that you're supposed to just suck it up or power through, to me, is just offensive.
What compelled you to come forward?
I think, it was Mental Health Week this week, and a lot of different people were kind of talking about it a little bit. I've acknowledged it many times kind of in passing, tweeting about it or mentioning my history with it, but I felt that, I'm in a pretty good place. I've got a great family that loves me. I've got a great job where, I talked with the NHL about releasing the article, and they were fully supportive. I'm in a good place, and I wasn't 8 years ago. And if it does help somebody to read that there's a hope, that there's light at the end of the tunnel, if my story had that effect on anybody, then it was worth sharing.
It was 05, right?
It was, yep.
Now, the article talks about you sitting on your couch at your family home in Boston with your late brother. And it talks about how you guys weren't allowed to watch South Park, but you seemed to get papal dispensation that day, which is a whole other story. After your brother passed away, did it resurface? Did the depression get worse?
No, because at that point I knew how to take steps to combat it. Obviously, I was and still am saddened and emotionally crushed by it. But, there's a difference between sadness and loss and depression.
Right.
Sadness is an emotion. And as much as I hate feeling it, there was a time when I was depressed where I would have killed to feel anything. So depression is more of a loss of feeling. And I certainly haven't had that since Brennan's accident.
Do you see the parallel between this and what's been done for gay rights with You Can Play?
I think so, and I think I underestimated what this article was going to the response it was going to get. I thought it was a small little thing, but I think what we're seeing is the power of just sharing stories. My story is not particularly interesting or incredible or anything like that. It's a fairly common story of someone who dealt with mental illness and survived it and continues to live with it. But the simple act of talking about it lets other people open up about their story or to maybe see themselves in it and hopefully take some steps to combat it.
How important is psychology or psychiatry?
It's hugely important, I think. I mean, like I keep drawing parallels to medical illness. There are doctors who specialize in your brain. And whether it's a psychiatrist and looking at medical options with medication, I was on Paxil for a while to help with my as an antidepressant, or whether it's a therapist, a counselor, a psychologist, just someone to talk to. I mean, I know for me, someone who doesn't, as weird as it sounds doing this interview, like to talk about himself to people around him, I needed someone that was paid and had to sit there and listen to me talk.
There's, again, there's such a stigma around that, around drugs like Paxil. There are, how do you combat that? How do you, and again, I go back to the culture that you've immersed yourself in, which is a locker room culture.
Well, I'm lucky in that I'm in a position where I refuse to allow people to stigmatize me for this. I took a medically prescribed drug that helped me stabilize my life and get to where I am today. I think it's tragic that there are people out there who do feel this stigma, and horrible that there are people out there who would stigmatize someone else for getting medical treatment. If no one ever gives someone a hard time for taking chemotherapy to combat cancer, why would when depression can be life-threatening. Obviously, it's not the same as cancer. I'm not saying that. That's a different level. But when it can be life-threatening and there's treatment that can help, why should anyone feel embarrassed for taking that treatment?
Finishing up with Patrick Burke on TSN 690 Montreal. Follow Patrick on Twitter at BurkeyYCP. Patrick, you're one of the directors for player safety at the NHL right now. Does this fall under the banner if a player suffers some sort of mental illness? Can they go through the league and get the help that they need?
They can. It's not specifically under player safety, but there is a joint setup between the NHL and the NHLPA where players have the ability to reach out confidentially to get help for issues such as this. It is something that I hope more and more players take advantage of because I do think that with all the stresses that the professional athlete has in his or her life, I do think that it's nice to know that there's someone out there who can listen to you talk, who can help understand your problems, and if necessary, help provide treatment for them.
Finally, I guess you're in this job a couple of months, and you're no longer the head of You Can Play anymore. I want to get your thoughts on Wade Davis.
Wade's been great. He was an absolute home run hire for us. He's already helping to expand our partnerships with other sports, and I think it's always been important from day one that the biggest thing we always wanted to do was share LGBT voices and help amplify the stories of gay athletes. And now having a full-time executive director who is a former NFL player who is himself gay, Wade's been an absolute home run so far.
Patrick, thanks so much for your time tonight. And again, just kudos for writing or for getting that piece out there and talking about something that's important that more people suffer from than we know and the more people need to talk about.
Oh, I appreciate you having me on to talk more.
Speak soon.
Thanks a lot.
Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here on TSN 690. We'll take a break and then we'll come back and bring you into the football game. Football, action, action, action.
Action,
action. Welcome back. Dave and Jay here on TSN 690. Got a few minutes left before we take you to the football game. That going to happen, Marco? There will be football.
There will be football tonight. Just a little distracted by Egon Spengler over there in the other room. Scared the hell out of me.
Oh.
Is he gone now?
He is gone. All right. Don't worry. Jay ain't afraid of no ghosts.
This is a weird thing.
Montreal's Sam Roberts Band bringing us in here. I Feel You. I like this song.
Nice riff.
Yeah, man. Great band. So, 10 years ago tonight, Jay. Let's see how good you are.
Okay.
What do you think happened 10 years ago tonight? Go back to it. October of 2003.
October 2003. I believe, was it in baseball? What was it? Are we talking sports?
It was in the world of sports. It was in the world of baseball. And I'll tell you.
Well, the Yankees won the World Series in 2003.
No,
the
they
Marlins
did not.
Did.
That is correct.
The Marlins.
Oh,
I got it wrong. Yeah. That dirty look from Marco.
The Yankees lost in five in the World Series to
That's
the Florida
it.
Marlins
That's
that year.
It.
Yeah. 10 years ago tonight, Moises Alou reached over the foul into the stands, and Steve Bartman unintentionally tried to catch. Oh man, 10 years ago was the Bartman play. Okay, 10 years ago, the Chicago Cubs were five outs from the World Series. My favorite story about all that, my favorite anecdote, is that the next night, the Boston Red Sox were five outs away from the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
They both blew it. 10 years since Steve Bartman has been seen in public. I can't imagine.
So ridiculous.
I can't imagine being Steve Bartman. I can't imagine being, I mean, imagine if your favorite thing was suddenly gone. Because Bartman, from all accounts, was the world's biggest Cubs fan. He loved them like nothing.
Don't you think he could come out now and be in public and go to a Cubs
game? In St. Louis, sure. Yeah. In Milwaukee, why not? Jeb Bush offered him clemency in Florida. I think, were we talking about this last week on the show, that Rod Blagojevich said that he was the governor of Illinois at the time, the now disgraced.
Right.
I believe he said that the guy should leave the state. And Jeb Bush offered him clemency in Florida. Just messed up stuff. The story transcended sports.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's now 105 years, 107 years since the Cubs have won a World Series. And they blame him. And it wasn't his fault. That's the kicker. It was so far from being Bartman's fault. Ball went through Alex Gonzalez's legs.
Yeah.
The team imploded. They were able to use him as the scapegoat.
Yeah, I mean.
And I don't know. I know you've spoken with Moises Alou about it. I don't know if he feels that way.
What he told me was, he just said he was still mad at the guy. He was kind of like, he understands what the guy was doing, as most of us do, most of us who are sane understand that the guy was just reaching for the ball and that he wasn't trying to obviously obstruct anything, you know. But Moises, you know what, to this day, he wasn't as understanding as I thought he would be. He's still saying, you know, that bleeping guy, you know, I had that ball. But I mean, that's from the standpoint of a competitor, of a winner.
Yeah.
You know, of a competitor at the highest level.
Okay, but he's talking about a fan, and
he is. He is, but, you know, he's just still, because he had the ball.
Did you see the play in the game last night?
With Prince Fielder.
Yes.
Could have been the same thing.
It absolutely could have been the same thing.
Prince should have had that ball, though.
For sure.
And he should have had that other ball that went right by him.
But it should have been fan interference.
Yes. But even the play just before, it was a tough play for the shortstop, and he threw the ball away, but it went right past Fielder. Fielder didn't even try to get the ball, and it went into the dugout.
Yeah, but I think that's because it went into the dugout, automatically the player got the base.
I know, but Fielder should have had that ball. He was off the bag. It went right through him. And then on that second play, he probably should have caught that one as well.
Tonight, we've got Ryu versus Wainwright. The Dodgers absolutely need a win. It's incredible. The Cardinals are up 2-0 in the series, batting 134 in the series. Yeah. And they're up 2-0.
Well, I mean, both series have been pretty much pitching. I mean, it's all about pitching, isn't it? In the end, that's what you realize.
Oh, man.
Are we into another pitching era now?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I
like
think...
Like the late 60s?
No, because in the late 60s, there weren't 8 million teams, which waters down the batting.
8
something.
Million. There are 8 million
There are
teams.
Too many teams in baseball. The Houston Astros are...
There's 8 million, definitely.
Well, the Houston Astros are a great example of it. They're a double-A team playing Major League Baseball.
Right.
Texas played them 19 times this year, won 17 of them, and because of it, they got to play in the wild card game.
Mm-hmm.
It's... I mean, don't get me started on that, but there is... There are so many double A and triple A or 4A hitters in Major League Baseball right now that it leads to Philip Humber for perfect games.
Oh, by the way, you made me think of something.
Philip Humber, yes.
Talking about the Florida Marlins.
Yeah.
2003.
Our favorite team.
Do you know that in team history, the Florida Marlins only have 2 winning seasons?
I don't think that's true.
I'm pretty sure that's true.
And both years they won the World Series?
That's right.
I think they had an over 500 season.
It's an astounding stat.
I think they've had an over
500. Which I didn't. Check up on it.
Okay. Well, you have a job. We're back on air in 4 hours, and the correction will be then.
Back in the day before the internet, it probably would have taken 4 hours for me to find it.
I'm pretty sure that they had an above 500 season with Freddie Gonzalez as manager not that long ago. Not a first place, but you can go with the stat that I am wrong.
I thought it was...
Wait, Marco, we need some clarification. Who's wrong there?
Jays are.
Okay. That never happens.
They had like an 83 win season, didn't they?
Twice in a row they had 83 and 79, 2004, 2005, exact same records,
yeah,
both years in a row. There's a couple
and
of
the only other one's 97.
They're a waste of space organization. Yeah. Screw them.
That's pretty much what I was trying to say.
That's right.
I should have checked that stat before I said it. But
you can
whatever.
Go with the only two times they've made the playoffs, they've won the World Series.
Goes to show, never believe anything I say.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I'm here.
That's right.
I'm the believable one, and you're the cute one.
Okay. You want to go that way.
Jay and I will be back after the football game tonight. We're going to wrap up the baseball game and the baseball playoffs with Grantland.com's Jonah Carey. Jonah just re-upped with Grantland. He's now a permanent member of Baseball Tonight. We're going to celebrate tonight.
We're going to celebrate?
Absolutely. That's huge news.
We got pumpkin pie
over here. Pumpkin pie?
From the...
It's time to celebrate.
It's from the Christian era, clearly.
The Christian era.
Before the Christian era.
Ah, like BCE.
BCE,
okay, right. It's the Pompeii pumpkin pie.
It's the Pompeii, yeah, pumpkin pie.
And just like that, we went full circle. That's very impressive.
I'm good, huh?
You are. That's why you're on the payroll.
Another thing about the Marlins.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
All right. Jim Leland was their manager back then, wasn't he?
I hate their uniforms.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're terrible.
Oh, gee. I had to say something controversial.
Can I take your order,
Next,
please?
You're going to tell me you like sunshine and puppy dogs.
I do.
All right. I want to thank you all for listening. Thank our guests, Patrick Burke and Mark Fainaruwata. The podcast will be up a little later on at thekaufmanshow.podbean.com. And Jay and I will be back after the football game.
Football.
Football.
Action.
Action.
Action. You intend to make this heart rewind.